leave this here. I'll not hang up in the air and go. I was going to suggest that we refer to the public utilities. No. Could I make this suggestion? Don has a research assistant, who's a third year law student at the lab, that's been writing memoranda for him in researching cases and checking procedures. And if we could tentatively approve this third preliminary draft of criminal mischief and direct the research assistant to check 2A. And to really thoroughly give it a going over and maybe talk to...
I think I'm on solid ground there, but... or I could do this, Mr. Chairman. I could prepare, as we did on our theft draft, when we got into one of the defenses on spouses, I think it was, where we could send this to the full commission as drafted and then show an alternative way of stating it, which would include this, the amount of...
Well, let's... I think that complicates it somewhat.
Yeah.
Let's have your assistant go over this and...
I think we ought to arrive at an opinion ourselves.
Right.
I think that's preferable, too. Well, and if you want to prove it the way it is, then we could check it further. And if there's any reason to believe that we're going to get into difficulty with it, then we'll call that to the attention of the subcommittee on that issue.
All right. With that,
I assume.
All right. Motion made that we tentatively approve preliminary draft number 3. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Preliminary draft 3 is approved and we move on to Robert.
How long do we think we'll be working today?
We don't have as much.
What do you think, Don?
Well, I would say if we give the district judge a $4,000 increase, that's a heck of an increase.
Richard's there. What he initially thought of as robbery, and if you've read through the commentary, I've tried to point out the reasoning and the thinking and the effect of that thinking in this draft. Now, of course, as far as degrees, our present statutes have degrees. We have traditionally unarmed robbery and armed robbery. We've retained that. We've modified it a little bit. Now, before we get into that, there are two things I would like to mention. Now, you'll notice that, particularly if you compare it with the text of Michigan, and I believe it's the Michigan draft that, where they have their first section contains a definition of terms. Now, I considered having a definition of terms in this draft. And as we go through, perhaps the subcommittee might want to do that. Definitions such as one, we might want to incorporate by reference the definitions that we have in our theft article, particularly definition of property. We might want to do that, and also we might want to define the term in the course of committing it. Michigan defines it, New York does not, but these are just preliminary considerations before we get into the substance of these sections. Now, the draft, as I indicated, have 2 degrees. First and second. Now, it would be robbery under the first section, robbery in the second degree, if in the course of committing theft, he uses or threatens the immediate use of physical force upon another for the purpose of either preventing or overcoming resistance to the taking of the property or resistance to the retention of the property immediately thereafter, or forcing another to deliver up the property or do any other act which might aid the commission of the theft. Then, if the act is accompanied by one or more of 4 aggravating factors, it then raised to the stature of robbery in the first degree. And those 4 factors are being armed with a deadly weapon, that is a gun, using or threatening the immediate use of a dangerous weapon, such as a club, causing or attempting to cause serious physical injury, or for being aided by an accomplice who is present. Now, the rationale here is that there's increased danger to the victim of the crime if, obviously, if the man, if the robber is armed with a deadly weapon, or if he attempts to seriously injure the victim either through the use of a dangerous weapon or without a dangerous weapon, if he attempts to seriously injure the victim, we make you think of it as aggravated assault, or where there's another person present. In other words, if there are two or more robbers, the danger to the victim is greater, the robbers reinforce each other, there's more likelihood of violence occurring, and also the consideration that if there's more than one there, it's obvious that there's been a conspiracy here, a planned conduct by more than one individual to commit a crime. The draft, and as we discussed back on our theft article, we talked about the theft by extortion. There we were concerned with the threat to cause physical injury in the future. Here we're talking about prohibiting the threat of immediate use of physical force, which would further help by to distinguish the two types of crime. Now, robbery in the second degree follows the approach of the Michigan Revised Penal Law, Section 3307, the New York Revised Penal Law, Section 160, also Connecticut's proposed draft, which substantially is the same as the New York draft, and Model Penal Code Section 222.1. And then first degree combined language from Michigan, New York, and Model Penal Code, and also from the Connecticut proposal. Now I'm going to skip over some of this background about relationship to our existing law. I think that probably most of you are familiar with traditionally what we're talking about when we talk about robbery. Of course, the Oregon court has defined it as open and violent larceny to the person. And this kind of language certainly reinforces an approach like this, which says that this is a kind of crime that is committed in the course of committing a theft, rather than. Certainly there's basis in Oregon case law for this kind of approach. The only thing, the primary thing, I think, not the only thing, but the primary thing that this draft does is that it shifts the focus of the attention from the taking of the property to the risk of injury, the violence to the victim. In other words, the language that we've used in our first section here, in the course of committing a theft, would mean that you would not necessarily have to have an actual taking of the property to commit robbery. That if this type of force were employed by the robber in the course of committing this theft, that even though he might be prevented someplace along the line from completing this act and having the completed taking of property result, under our present law, it wouldn't be. Under our present law, it would not be robbery if property weren't taken. Under this draft, it could be robbery, even though the robbery didn't result in the actual physical taking of property. Now,
it could be, even though it didn't result in the actual physical taking.
That's right.
That's because
what we're saying is that impliedly we're saying, in using this kind of language, we're saying that what the law is concerned about here is the use of force upon the victim. And if the use of force in either stealing property or attempting to steal it from the person of another, that's what we're trying to prevent, and that's what we're going to punish under the criminal statutes, is trying to prevent the physical danger to the victim. Now, as I set out on page 5 under my commentary, that the robbery article retains the basic rationale of the existing Oregon statutes, the prohibition against the forcible taking of property from another. The scope of the fundamental concept of robbery is altered markedly. As the Michigan reporters observed, the present approach is that unless property is taken from the person or presence of the victim, there is no robbery. If the actor tries to rob and is prevented or is otherwise unsuccessful, the matter must be treated as attempted robbery or assault with intent to rob. This emphasizes the property aspects of the crime and treats it as an aggravated form of theft. If, however, the primary concern is with the physical danger to the victim and his difficulty in protecting himself from sudden attacks against his personal property, then the actual taking of the property becomes less important. The draft follows this line of reasoning and the view that repression of violence is the principal reason for being guilty of robbery. The language of, in the course of committing a theft, would extend from the attempt stage through the phase of flight. This also eliminates the question of what is a lesser included offense to a charge of robbery. Under existing statutes, the only factor that need be present to aggravate the crime is that of being armed with a dangerous weapon. As noted previously, that factor is retained, but in terms of a deadly weapon, and becomes, and plus three other additional factors are added. The crime becomes first degree robbery if the actor uses or threatens the immediate use of a dangerous weapon, such as a club, while mere possession of a deadly weapon, such as a gun, would be sufficient to raise the statute of first degree. Or if the actor causes or attempts to cause serious physical injury to any person. Now here, this type of language is suggested by the Model Penal Code. The exact wording that I've used is the same that we employed in burglary. Causes or attempts to cause physical injury to any person.
And that's where we had the extended discussion between the difference of using or threatening a dangerous weapon vis-a-vis possessing a deadly weapon, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also, now, we get into another departure. The use or threat of force would not need to be directed at the owner of the property as in the present law. The important consideration should be whether the actor, by the threats he uses, intends to prevent or overcome resistance to the taking of the property, or to its immediate retention by the robber, or to force the owner or another person to engage in conduct which might aid in the theft. If such threats are or might be effective, it should be immaterial that someone other than the owner is immediately threatened. As the Michigan commentary points out, there is no purpose served by calling it robbery if threats are directed against the wife or child of the owner, but something else if the same threats are directed against the owner's fiancé or a child of a complete stranger who might be present. It would not be necessary either that the threat or use of force be directed toward a person present. This would include, within the ambit of robbery, the not uncommon situation such as threatening to have an accomplice immediately harm the wife of the robber unless the stormer empties the safe for the robber in the store. Where it's not uncommon this day and age for the manager of Safeway to be met in the store when he opens up saying, well, we've got a man over at your house and they've got your wife or your children and I've got him, you know, he's on the phone and if I don't tell him that I've got the money, then something's going to happen to him. In other words, here the threat is not against the owner of the property or the person having control of the property. It would still be robbery even though the threat were against somebody who wasn't even present. And also, it would repeal part of ORS 163-270, which is assault with intent to rob. Portions of that statute dealing with rape and mayhem would need to be picked up in our assault articles because this, our assault with intent to rob is just one of the provisions under the present statute. That portion of ORS 163-280 relating to assault and robbery while armed with a dangerous weapon would be repealed. Provisions dealing with assault with intent to kill would likewise need to be incorporated into the assault article. ORS 163-290, robbery while not armed with a dangerous weapon, would be repealed. ORS 163330, train robbery would be repealed. Nothing takes place would be retained. You can see my reason on that. The reason that there doesn't seem to be a good reason in this day and age for making robbery of trains and robbery and what else. But that in a nutshell is what we've tried to do here. I think that there are a number of policy considerations obviously involved here. Talk about the aggravating factors first, which is certainly a departure, because right now the only thing that distinguishes one robbery from another type of robbery is the dangerous weapon aspect of it. But I think there's a good reason to distinguish between a deadly weapon, as we know it now, and I'm assuming here again that we will have a similar definition of a deadly weapon, as opposed to a dangerous weapon. That if we want to try to suppress violence, and the use of violent means to steal property, that I think there's a good sound policy reason for prohibiting even being armed with a deadly weapon. Because I think we're all familiar with a situation where someone is charged with shooting somebody in the course of a robbery, and he says, well, I just had it with me and I didn't intend to shoot anybody. Danger to the victim and to others by the robber even being armed with a deadly weapon, I think, is great enough that even though that weapon is not actually used in the course of the robbery, there's good sound reason for saying that if the robbery was committed by someone armed with a deadly weapon, that should be sufficient to make it more serious in the eyes of the law. Also, but when you get to the consideration of a dangerous weapon, something that can be used to serious bodily harm, but is not inherently a dangerous weapon, a deadly weapon, I think then the use or the threatened use of it becomes important rather than the type of weapon it is. For example, we've had cases in Lane County, a robbery committed by the use of a beer bottle and that type of thing, where this is not inherently a dangerous weapon. It is if it's employed in a certain fashion. So you would certainly, it seems to me, get off into some strange results if you prohibited just being armed with a dangerous weapon. But if there is an actual use of this weapon, whether it's a club or a stick, a piece of tire chain, or whatever it might happen to be, then the crime, it seems to me, should be treated as more serious. Or even without a weapon, if there is an attempt to cause serious physical injury, and it would seem to me that a likely place where this would occur is where you have accomplices, you have two or more robbers, and the mugging type of situation where they beat up the victim, that they may not use a weapon, they may not even use a stick or a club or anything else, but the type of injury that's inflicted upon the victim is serious enough to make it punishable to a greater extent.
Now this I'm a situation where they push the note to the bank teller and say, I have a gun in my pocket or I have a bomb in the bag. Is that covered under first degree?
No, it isn't.
Threatens or uses or threatens the immediate use of a dangerous weapon.
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
Well,
that's second degree.
That's first degree. Sub 2, uses or threatens the immediate use of the dangerous weapon.
Yeah, you have to have it.
Well, when I said no, if you look at the approach that was taken by, now the Michigan Code, sub 2 of section 3305, they talk about being armed with a deadly weapon or a dangerous instrument. And then they go on to say, possession then and there of an article used or fashioned in a manner to lead any person who is present reasonably to believe it to be a deadly weapon or dangerous instrument, or any verbal or other representation by the defendant that he is then and there so armed, is prima facie evidence under subparagraph 1 that he was so armed. Now, obviously I didn't employ that provision, because it seems to me that it's somewhat unnecessary to say that. If you have a victim who has been robbed, and he may never see a weapon, I think the victim's testimony as to what occurred and what was said to him by the defendant would be enough without a prima facie provision. But here again, it's just a matter of approach to this. But I can see that there might be a question now under sub 2 of robbery in the first degree. I think you're going to get into a question of fact here, in any event. But the immediate use of a dangerous weapon, what's your proof going to be that he had a dangerous weapon? And in a case like that, your proof would be that what verbal representations he made to the victim.
But you don't say here that he must have it with him or anything. It's threatening. That's what it says here. So I guess.
Glad you did.
Offering you a note, the fact that you have a gun in your pocket is just about it, isn't it, John?
Well, I would. It seemed to me that the important element would be the threatened use, the way the language is drawn, and it should be. I go into the First National Bank and I say to the teller, I've got a hand grenade in this paper sack, and by God, if you don't give me all your $20 bills, I'm going to let it go. Now, I might not have a hand grenade, but there was a case exactly in point where this occurred, federal of course, but it seems to me that that act is as serious as if I went in there with a...
Yeah, but isn't your question there, but if you just went in there with a note and give me all your $100 bills or give me all your money or else?
The guy says, okay. Or else.
That's a smart way, right?
Well, I would. Yeah.
What does that imply? Threat? No, suspicion of it.
Well. Yeah, I think he'd be hard pressed to show that he threatened the use of a dangerous weapon. It'd be a matter to argue about.
We got a case of one of our boys is playing on right now. All the note says is I'm $300. I thought I was drunk. And we think we're going to get that one dismissed. Who doesn't want $300?
Yeah, that was all that was said.
That's all that was on the note.
Well, we have some very, very... Well, actually, he can't plead insanity because he was sober enough to be able to write.
Well, what happened? He had prepared a much better note, much more usable note, and he forgot and left it home when he got drunk. And then he scribbled another one, and that's all he got written.
Did he get the money?
No, he didn't get the money. The gal gave the alarm and they arrested him right there.
And he's charged with what, Tim?
Well, I think we've got a serious policy consideration to make. Because in the current code, assault and robbery go hand in hand. As a matter of fact, the assault statutes contain the provisions for robbery. The unarmed robbery, the art of robbery, and
so on. Now here, what we're doing is we're separating robbery from assault completely, and this has been the trend. Now, I'm wondering, to assist us, Don, if I've got a lot of questions, but first of all, to assist us, is there any commentary in New York or the Model Penal Code that gives a rationale for doing it this way? I think, generally, my experience has been that probably the least objectionable part of the whole Oregon Criminal Code has been its robbery section. We haven't historically had the problems with robbery that we have with forgery, embezzlement, theft, even burglary. Now, what's the rationale behind the separation? And maybe there is some commentary short that would help us. Maybe there
well, isn't. Actually, depending on how you look at this draft, I don't think that we're really departing. We're not really separating assault from the theft. We're just saying, if anything, I think we're moving more in the direction of saying that this is really a type of an assault more than anything else.
But assault with intent to commit robbery is a violation.
Right, and as you look at our present statutes, we have assault with intent to rob where there isn't any property taken. But then you have your unarmed robbery and your armed robbery, which is, as you look at the cases and some of the cases I've set out here in the commentary, you see that certainly as far as the Oregon court has been concerned, assault is fundamental to robbery, right? For example, these cases on page, that I've set out on page 3, use of force. There are cases that say that statement of show. Must prove property was taken by force and violence or by assault. And we're retaining that. We're saying that this is an assault, but we're also saying that to make it robbery, that there doesn't have to be property taken. That's the big difference.
The only thing that runs through my head is that you're calling something robbery when it isn't what we have traditionally conceived of as robbery.
That isn't.
Robbery is basically taking something away from somebody.
The forcible taking of personal property of another.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, that this is a departure, and the rationale being is that Michigan commentary shows that, well, what are we primarily concerned with? Are we concerned with the taking of the property? Are we concerned with trying to prohibit taking of property through violent means?
Well,
and if the violent means are employed, the fact that someplace during the course of this act, the robber was
thwarted.
Yeah, one way or another.
What we're saying is that an attempt to commit the crime is just as serious as the successful commission.
That's
well, then we're running head on into our general provisions. If any attempt is made to define an attempt, is this not right? I mean, here we're not making it, we're doing away with the distinction between principles and accessories. We're saying that it's just as serious to attempt to commit it as it is to complete it. So what position is that going to put us in if the other subcommittee comes in and says that an attempt to commit a crime is constituted by the
unsuccessful completion of the act or something. Then we have a dire ambiguity, don't we?
Yes, you do. And you would have, there would be, they'd have to be reconciled. Yeah, I recognize that.
I'm thinking out loud, and maybe it's not a problem, but I guess there isn't any practical problem. So very often now, where a guy starts to commit a robbery, he's indicted for robbery, the DA sees his proof is going to fail, he lets him plead to attempted robbery.
Yeah.
Now here, we're not providing for that flexibility. Attempted robbery is the same as robbery
we'll still have an article on assault. I mean, I don't want you to get the impression that this is to take the place of assault as we know it. This is a form of assault with intent to rob. Right, but there would still be other types of assault that the prosecutor could fall back on if he felt that he couldn't, he was lacking proof of the property taking aspect or element or the attempt to commit the theft.
You're taking assault with intent to rob, and you're just putting that in the one instance in with armed robbery, and in the second instance with unarmed robbery. Well, okay.
Yeah, I think the first minute of a robbery is just as dangerous as the last minute. And the fact of whether the fellow actually accomplished his goal or not.
We're doing away with the aspiration, aren't we? Presently, in common law, is forceful taking personal property. Mm-hmm. Here, we're doing away with.
What's the present penalty for assaulting and such a rob?
Well, it's very, very funny, but it says for a term not exceeding the maximum punishment provided by law for conviction of the respective greater crime. So if it were armed, it would be not exceeding 5, if it were unarmed, not exceeding 15. Now, in view of that Fromling case that I argued, I'm not sure that it's this one tested at that point. I don't think we'll pull that.
Well, my friend wasn't this one in attempted rape.
No, it was probably was the assault with intent to kill, where Judge Rain convicted the guy on 4 counts of assault with intent to kill and sentenced him to consecutive terms. Then it was reversed and came back, and he resentenced him. Well, it was reversed. The Supreme Court said that could be sentenced what the Supreme Court did in effect was cut the sentence in half.
Mm-hmm.
complicated, and I can't recall exactly, but anyway, I'm not sure this statute would hold up.
Well,
thank you very much. This is something I think we ought to explore.
I'd like to point out that this is the direction of the Model Penal Code, this is the direction of the New York law, of Michigan, Connecticut, all the recent revisions, looking at it in this light, looking at the question of the violent means employed rather than whether or not there's a taking of property. Now, commentary to the Model Penal Code, not in the edition you have, but under Kennedy Draft Number 11, they say this, that in the course of committing a theft, as the language, as they've employed that language in Section 222.1, in the course of committing a theft, and then they go on to define that as an attempt to commit theft or in flight after the attempt or commission. Their commentary is this, that the thief's willingness to use force against those who would restrain him in flight strongly suggests that he would have employed it to effect the theft had there been need for it. And I think that's an important consideration, that maybe the guy's got the property, he's taken it from the victim, and he has not used force up until such time as some attempt is made to regain the property. He pulls a gun or a club or a knife and uses it then, which is the rationale and the reasoning of the Model Penal Code is, well, if he used it then, it's likely that he would have used it had he needed to in the course of actually getting the property from the victim. It says, no rule of thumb is proposed to delimit the time and space of flight. The concept of fresh pursuit would be helpful in suggesting realistic boundaries between the occasion of the theft and a later distinct occasion when the escape thief is apprehended. In other words, if 2 hours later or the next day he's seen and some attempt is made at that time to either get the property back or restrain him in some way, he uses force then. I don't think under any of these drafts, Model Penal Code or New York or any of the others, that you would say he committed armed robbery or robbery in the first degree. And then they also say, with respect to attempted robbery and assault with intent to rob, since common law larceny and robbery required asportation, the severe penalties for robbery were avoided if the crime was interrupted before the accused laid hold of the goods or if it developed that the victim had no property to handle. Legislation developed the offense of assault with intent to rob. The proposed text of the Model Penal Code makes it immaterial whether property is or is not obtained. And in other words, what we're saying, in effect, by repealing our assault with intent to rob statute, we're not really saying anything so much different than we're saying in that statute right now. We're saying that it's just as serious, even though you didn't get the property, if one of these...
And it makes a wasted effort for the victim to try to talk the guy out of it.
I don't think the robber though knows about the distinction. Do you?
He might. He's a rogue.
He's a freak. Well, I don't know. I think the armed robbers fall so readily that they don't get to propose that. Because they're so just easily apprehended. They aren't quite like a burglar or a check.
Well, it seems to me that robbery means robbery, and that means taking something away from the guy. But there is a distinction between succeeding and not succeeding, and that we can take care of the concept here by making the penalty for assault with intent to rob something very near the penalty for robbery.
It's identical now, assuming that statute's constitutional.
Mm-hmm. But otherwise, we ought to call it assault with intent to rob instead of calling it robbery. And it did not happen in separate places.
reason I don't think that statute's constitutional is because what Foamling said was that an attempt to commit a crime can't be punishable by the same degree of punishment as complete that. And if that's the case, then Don, this would screw this up, wouldn't it? Let me just ask another question and we'll come back to this sometimes. I don't actually understand this sub 4 of robbery in the first degree is aided by another person actually present. Explain that again.
Well, what we're saying there is that what we're trying to prevent and what we're going to punish if it occurs is the use of force in the course of committing a theft. And that...
Force or show of force.
Right. And it's going to be more serious and more aggravated if there is an element present there that increases the danger of force or increases the danger of injury to the victim.
In other words, the guy's accomplice is his additional force.
Right. In other words, if you're assaulted by two individuals or by one who's obviously got somebody there to back him up, is the danger of injury and the danger of force being employed greater? And it seems to me it is, and it seems to me that it's there's a good reasoning for making that more serious, that it's fact that a guy has someone there to help him, the robber has an accomplice who is actually there with him, the presence of the victim. And it's just as much a threat to the victim as having the robber armed with a club.
Well, this is moot except in a case where two great big guys go up to the cashier in the department store and without attempting to cause physical injury or without using or threatening the use of dangerous weapon or without being armed, they just say, give us your money or else. Now, in that, it would attach in that event, but it would be actually meaningless in terms of enhancing the degree if they went in with a gun, right?
If there were two of them, they wouldn't need a gun.
That's right.
If there were 10 of them and one of them had a gun, the fact that there were 10 wouldn't make it any more serious than if there were one.
Okay.
No. But if there were 10 and none of them had a gun, it would be more serious than if there were one.
The fact is that these fellows are actually pretty cowardly at heart. And they pick up a lot of strength from each other. When they're together, it's very difficult to commit violence that they wouldn't otherwise commit.
You're talking about a situation we have with a lot of young punks that go into a grocery store, a candy store in a particular area, and they tell the old man at the cash register, give us your money.
Well, you had a case in Multnomah County, I think, not too many weeks ago, involving an old woman.
Yeah, where three or four kids
stole her purse. I think the oldest was 19. He was indicted, I believe, for felony murder, wasn't he?
Right.
But then there were several other juveniles, and she was knocked down in the course of trying to hold on to her pocketbook and fractured her skull and died. And I think the fact that there were several of them there no doubt contributed greatly to the injury that she suffered.
Well,
what happened to them one?
But we governed by this code in that particular set of circumstances, it would be the sub 3 that would attach rather than sub 4, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Either one.
Either one. Yeah, but it, assuming for purpose of argument, yeah, that sub 3 would attach. But supposing that you had the 4 there and the old lady didn't get hurt, but they still either they were trying to get her purse or they did in fact succeed in stealing her purse from her, the fact that she wasn't hurt would be immaterial if there was more than one present there to commit this crime.
The threat to the individual being threatened is much greater.
And the fact she didn't get hurt, I think, should be immaterial. What we should be concerned with is what's the likelihood, what's the danger that's there.
This is good, because in the customary purse snatch, in the usual purse snatch, there's a couple of them, and they grab the purse, and they run, and they don't hurt the victim. But with this language, that would be first-degree robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be.
And I think that as far as having a deterrent effect, that a provision like this is good from the standpoint of maybe trying to prevent this type of thing. If two guys get together and start planning a robbery, they know that if both of them participate in this and are both present at the time of the robbery, it's going to be the same kind of rap they get for going in there with a gun. Of course, this may be wishful thinking, but I think that the deterrent effect of the law is important, and I think that if we can make it clear that we're trying to repress thefts committed through violent means, and that this is inherently violent. It's like saying that, like calling a riot a peaceful demonstration. I mean, the fact that you get people together under certain circumstances, it's inherently dangerous, and it presents implicitly a threat to the well-being of other people.
Well, you know, I'm wondering this, though. We have the principal accessory rule abrogated by current statute, and so we bring the driver of the getaway car in as a principal and make him as liable as the fellow that has his finger on the trigger. We have a question with respect to the definition of presence and whether or not the guy outside in the getaway car is actually present within the meaning of this statute. That's moot, of course, if there's a gun involved. But secondly, how does this hit run headlong into the principal accessory rule, which I will doubtless repeat. Does this give the DA an option to charge a guy who's outside in the car as a principal? Yeah, or
in the language
of this statute or that.
It would make both of them guilty of robbery if the word present is broad enough to include the guy out in the car. I don't know what it is or not. I would think it isn't.
You would think it is not because of the modified
word? I think the
intent
of this is that the presence of the two guys have caused fear in the victims. The victim must have been influenced by the fact there's more than one, or you shoot one, but you have to be able to shoot two of them.
Yeah, and
the state of mind of the victim is the
government. The second man out of the car doesn't constitute an assault.
In other words, they're using a second man for additional show of force.
Now that's what it was intended to do, and that's why the language actually present, trying to show that actually there with the victim. Now, perhaps that could be strengthened somewhat to make it clearer. The language of the Michigan Code says is aided by another person actually present.
I think that would be up to the...
New York says aided by another actually present.
I don't think you can. I don't think you can define that.
I don't think you need to. It obviously means as much as we think it ought to mean, and the only argument could be that it might mean more than what we think it ought to mean.
What we're trying to prevent is the force or the danger that's going to be presented by having more than one robber present.
I'm quoting, shows the note across the counter to another fellow out. Car, you better come across his money. Then you gotta.
Wouldn't attach unless the victim looked out the window and saw him.
Yeah, I think he'd have to be convinced it was true, I suppose.
I would think so, too.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be any assault on the part of the second person.
And I think there would have to be somebody.
Yeah.
In fact, there.
Well, now, this doesn't create any problem for me now that we discuss it. But jumping up to section to the beginning, robbery in the second degree, where we say that you commit robbery in the second degree if in the course of committing a theft, he uses or threatens the immediate use of physical force upon another with the intent of preventing or overcoming resistance to the taking of property or to the retention thereof immediately after the taking. Now, I go into Kathleen's store and I look around and there's nobody there. And I take a pair of overalls off the shelf and start out the store. And I get outside on the sidewalk and Kathleen yells at me and starts chasing me. And half a block away she grabs me. And in order to get away from her, I beat her up. Now, that act was initially theft. But we're saying now that it's robbery because after the fact, I used force to prevent, or used force to ensure the my retention of the property.
I suppose the jury would have to be instructed that they must find that the purpose of using that force was that, enough to avoid arrest. I mean, and not necessarily to avoid arrest, but had to include.
If you had the same situation, for instance, and in the chase, which seems to happen with somebody where you drop the benefits of your act of crime and then get into a hassle, you probably would have.
Then you wouldn't.
In a situation where the use of force was to escape detention rather than to hang on the property, you'd already dropped it.
Yeah, I had to be distinguishable, right. And like the Model Penal Code reporters point out, in your hypothetical there, Mr. Chairman, if he used force then, if he used force on Kathleen when she was trying to reclaim the property, recover from it, it's likely to assume that you would have used force had you needed to before in order to get the property in the first place.
You think that's a constitutional assumption?
I'm dropping it during the chase that the intention there was escape, and maybe the idea of discarding the property was the hope that that would forestall any further chase, which it does in some occasions.
Yeah, and in your case, you see, this you wouldn't be trying to either prevent or overcome resistance to retention of the property, because the thief's already dropped.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, now, in my hypothetical, assuming that the jury was instructed that in order to find the defendant guilty of robbery in the second degree, you must find that the use of force by the defendant was for the sole purpose of... Oh, yeah, the sole purpose of retaining possession of the stolen property.
No, I would think that part of his purpose could be to retain possession of it, but another part of it could be to escape, too. So long as...
Within the language of this statute?
Well,
preventing or overcoming resistance to the taking, that occurs point blank, confrontation, or to the retention thereof immediately after the taking. Now,
so long as he had that purpose, it wouldn't matter if another part of his purpose was to escape. I wouldn't be.
Well, I'm not sure I do, but assume that were the instruction, that you must find that it was a part of his purpose to retain possession of property. And the defendant takes a stand and he says, yes, I shoplifted that article, but I was scared to death when they started chasing me, and the only reason I fought back was because I wanted to get away, and I was afraid for my life. It wasn't because I wanted to retain possession of the property. Now, assuming the jury believed him, would the jury be entitled to return a lesser included of theft because you employ the language in the course of committing the theft?
I would think so.
Or assault. Isn't it really of assault?
No, I think if, when you say assuming the jury believed him, the jury would then be required under the instructions to return a verdict that would not be improper.
Oh, so well, keeping a lawful arrest and fights is really the soul, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's a different problem.
That is a different problem. But now when we have an indictment for robberies.
Oh, I see your question.
And you go in.
Is the larceny an included offense when we have said that it doesn't make that bit of difference on robbery whether you accomplish it or not? That does make a problem.
Well, as we get over. Now, I had a section here on defense and a section to prohibit use of claim of right as a defense to a charge of robbery on the theory that there wasn't any theft because there was a claim of right, and if there wasn't any theft, there couldn't be robbery. But I think that you could have several different included offenses in this thing, seems to me.
You might be in a little trouble where you haven't made a necessary element of robbery the actual taking or property.
But you have attempted theft.
We don't have attempted theft. We were going to cover that under the general, weren't we?
Well, that's what I meant, the lesser included offense, though. If it's in the course of committing a theft, and it gets stopped someplace short of completing, then that would you still have the attempt, isn't it?
Well, I would think so.
I just don't know.
I don't think we want to get balled up on the difference between what we're trying to accomplish with one statute and what we're trying to accomplish with another. Now, our attempt statutes are going to be completely different, I would think. I mean, we're concerned there with general provisions relating to incomplete crimes. But here, we're not saying this is an incomplete crime. This is a complete crime. This is just one way of committing. If there is an element of force or threat of force employed. It's not going to be robbery. It's not going to be robbery if it's attempted theft. And it's prevented in some way unless there's some element of force or threat of force employed. That's when you're going to step over into the robbery area.
And that force can be committed or used under this while the guy's running away.
Yes.
If while running he attempts to...
If he stops to fight, he's no longer running.
Well, I mean, after it's over with, while he's trying to escape, either by running or some other conduct, if he is attempting to retain the stuff.
He, by his decision, has changed the course of his crime. He changed it from a theft to a robbery, but decided he's not going to fight.
And if the purpose of fighting is to retain the property,
yeah,
he got, that makes it robbery.
All right. I run out of the store, and there are some people on the sidewalk in front of me, and I run over and knock them down and hurt them. I say, I didn't use force on those people to retain the property. I used force on those people to ensure my getaway. Then it would be robbery.
If the jury believed that.
They just like taking hostages and getaway. Or whatever.
And I would think if you're the defendant and that was the fact that you just got in the car and you ran over some bystander and you're hasty to get out of there, you'd be in a pretty good position to argue, I would think, that this isn't robbery.
All right, so...
Because you're going to have to look at the nature of the victim or who was injured.
If you grabbed one of the people standing and threw them in the way of the pursuer, then I think that would be a different thing. It would be the same as taking them hostage.
Well, you want to broaden this to include the exercise of force to facilitate a getaway?
No.
That's a different concept.
Yeah, I wouldn't think I'd want to do that.
All right, it is.
Now, the language here, with respect to this use of force, and saying that the force or the threat of it has to be accompanied with one of these two intents, either the intent to prevent or overcome resistance to the taking or the retention of the property, or forcing them to do some act, or forcing a person to do some act to assist in the commission of this theft. That's from Michigan. That's the Michigan approach, and I think it's better. I think it's better than either New York or the Model Penal Code, because certainly as we look at some of the arguments you've raised, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the Model Penal Code in New York, you'll see that the use of force there is not limited to that extent, because the Model Penal Code states a person is guilty of robbery if in the course of committing a theft he inflict serious bodily injury upon another. Now, under the Model Penal Code, your hypothetical would be robbery. Under our draft, I don't think it would be.
Now, under Michigan, though, back on page 10 in the blue sheet, section 3301, in the course of committing theft, quote, in the course of committing a theft, end quote, embraces acts which occur in an attempt to commit or the commission of theft or implied after the attempt or commission. Now, so the use of force and implied after the commission brings that within the scope of robbery, doesn't it?
No. Because you've got to look then over to Michigan 3307, which is their basic robbery statute, robbery in the third degree. And then it says, if in the course of committing a theft, as that term is defined in 3301, he uses force against the person, the owner, or any person present with intent to overcome his physical resistance, or physical power of resistance, or threatens the imminent use of force against a person of anyone who is present with intent to compel acquiescence to the taking of or escaping with the property. So it's limited. They go on to limit it. In other words, just the mere use of or threat of force in the course of committing a theft would not necessarily make it robbery under the way I read the Michigan draft. And then, New York also. I'll retract what I said about Michigan. I think the language I employ is closer to New York's than it is to Michigan, as a matter of fact. because Section 160 under New York, their language they use is where I got the language that employed in my draft. It's the model penal code, which really is the fraud one.
Well, you know, yes. Hopscotch around here. Michigan, Connecticut, New York and Connecticut start out by saying robbery is forcible stealing. Period. Why didn't we use that?
Well, of course we
don't use stealing anymore.
I purposely avoided the use of stealing.
No, but
this
well,
is
I
avoided, we try to avoid it in our theft.
This is better. Okay. Or any other questions? Not sure.
Do they really say here what they mean? With the intent of, up here in section, first section, second green, with the intent of preventing or overcoming resistance to, and then down the retention thereof. What does that mean? Retention by whom?
By the.
I know that's what we mean by a robber, but is that what we're seeing? Use of physical force upon another person with the intent of preventing or overcoming resistance to the retention of the property immediately after taking. That sounds to me like what we're actually saying is the guy is trying to overcome resistance to his retention of the property.
The robber is.
And the storekeeper is trying to overcome his resistance. This doesn't sound about right to me.
Well, now wait a minute. Would it sound all right to you if you say a person commits the crime of robbery in the second degree if, in the course of committing a theft, he uses or threatens the immediate use of physical force upon another person with the intent of preventing or overcoming resistance to his taking of the property or to his retention thereof?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah,
that would. So his in two places there, and you got it without that change.
Okay.
So his taking instead of
his or her.
Yes.
Okay, so moved. All in favor say aye. Aye. Now, any other problems with that?
I'm not at all familiar with this Purdy case, and although I have problems with it, it seems that there could be a problem with that very phrase, preventing or overcoming resistance. No, I'm sorry, out of the top part of section, first section, second degree, used or threatened to be made use of physical force. In the extortion section, exactly the same thing, and it would be by the terms of the statute, both could apply to the same act.
No.
We of immediate?
Because we
extortionally use the language.
It says future, but in a safe way, short case you were talking about. This wasn't future.
Well, I think we have some precedent for this in current decisions on extortion. But we discussed this.
Yeah, we booted that future thing around.
We booted that around for about five drafts.
Yeah, right. And this, your point's a good one. And that's the very thing we were trying to avoid. And to draw a clear distinction, or attempt to draw a distinction between theft by extortion, the threat to commit bodily injury or use force in the future, as opposed to an immediate use of force.
Within the same incident, would be the definition that would attach to the robbery statute, while it's probably in a certain chain of.
In other words, say the actor comes into the store and he says, I want your money, or I'm going to be back tomorrow, and we're going to, fix your store up or blow it up or what. That would it would seem to me that would be a threat to do something in the future. Say, as opposed to saying, if you don't give me your money, we're going to tear your store up right now, or we're going to beat you up right now. Or, the difference being the
right, I see what you mean.
Is it an immediate use of force, or is it a threat to use force?
It's
later on.
It's a distinction without a difference, almost.
The guy said, my accomplice is in your home, and if he doesn't get a call from me in 15 minutes, he's going to harm your child.
Well, I think that's robbery, and that was my intent, to make such a crime robbery, or such an act the crime of robbery, because the threat isn't to him. But I think 15 minutes is
immediate.
Is immediate. Yeah.
We had the justice here when we discussed that too. Court justice sitting right there talking about that. So I think we're.
But this, I'll tell you, this sure points up the reason why it's a good idea to have one subcommittee take an area like this and run with it through the whole scope of the crimes, because. This way, we're aware of what our intent was, what we were trying to do in our theft draft. I'm not sure it helps us, but at least we recognize the problem,
What happens if the DA guesses wrong in that instance? And we say that the guy comes in and says, if you don't hand this over, my accomplice over at your house is going to do thus or so to your child. He charges him with robbery, and Bruce Spaulding makes a very persuasive argument on behalf of his motion to acquit at the end of the state's case, and grounds that this really is extortion. And the judge grants it. There's jeopardy, isn't there?
Well, is there? I'm not sure there's jeopardy.
That's it. I don't know.
There's jeopardy as far as the robbery charge is concerned.
Is there jeopardy as far as the...
I'm not so sure there'd be jeopardy as far as a later charge of extortion is concerned. Because your elements, your facts, your proof would be different. You've gotten under double jeopardy, and I've never been able to determine just what test the Oregon court employs. My recollection of double jeopardy, you have two different tests, one of which is employed in most jurisdictions, the same evidence test, whether or not the same evidence has to be used in the subsequent trial as was used in the first, or the same transaction test. Did it all occur in the same transaction? One, of course, the same evidence being a more liberal view.
Under either criteria, Don, it would be jeopardy, wouldn't it?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Same evidence? It would be the same evidence. It would be the same transaction.
This is why we need the appeal, don't you, for the state.
I'm not so sure that it's the same evidence if your evidence shows that there was a threat to commit an injury in the future. That wouldn't be the same evidence as testimony that shows there is a threat to commit immediate bodily harm, would it?
Well, the evidence in both instances would be the same. Evidence would be that the defendant said, somebody's over at your house, is going to do thus or so to your child in 5 minutes unless you give me the money. The question to be resolved was, does this constitute immediate threat or a threat in the future?
Well, first one, he says that somebody is over at your house now. Well, he hasn't any damn right to be. He's a burglar over there now. That's immediate. And he's going to make it worse pretty soon.
Well, maybe that would be the guideline. If he is, it's immediate. If he will...
But if he says somebody will, in 15 minutes, go to your house.
Good point. That kind of straightens your question out. It's amazing how much we...
picked up just by some of these.
Well, here, it's our intention here, isn't it, to make the guy guilty even though he doesn't steal anything or copy. But what about this phrase, in the course of committing a theft? Wouldn't they want to say committing or attempting to commit?
Yeah, now that's, as I mentioned when we first started into this today, that we may want to put another section in here for definitions. It seems to me we could either define what we mean by the course of committing a theft as the Model Penal Code does it, which says it occurs in an attempt or in flight after the attempt or commission. Or we could take the approach similar to the New York method, which is, it seems to me to read a little narrower than that. Because they say that a person is guilty of robbery when forcibly steals property and when in the course of the commission of the crime or of immediate flight therefrom. See, now they don't say anything about an attempt. In fact, they don't really define commission of the crime at all, the way I read that. They're saying. So it would be a matter of interpretation what they mean by commission.
Wouldn't we make that abundantly clear here by just saying in the course of the, of committing or attempting to commit a theft?
The person commits the crime of robbery in the second degree. Of course,
he was trying to be in the course of committing a theft, but he couldn't be in the course of committing a theft if none was ever committed.
Unless you define what. Seems to me we might be on safer ground if we define what we mean by that phrase.
Committing a theft.
Yeah. In other words, in the course of committing a theft, Michigan says embraces acts which occur in an attempt to commit or the commission of theft or in flight after the attempt or commission.
You know,
it would take care of it, all right.
Michigan.
Yes, that would take care of
The only suggestion I might make there would seem to me that in flight after the attempt or commission might be a little broad. We might want to say immediate flight.
Yeah.
To make it clear that we're talking about, we're not talking about flight that commits a crime and steals property and then he's attempting to flee the state or something. I don't know if that would be a problem or not, but we might.
Well, Michigan says, first, that the definitions contained in section 3201 are applicable to this chapter, and those are the definitions, and we could say the definitions contained in chapter or section blank, which are our theft provisions, are applicable here, and then pick up this suggestion as far as playing in the course of committing the theft. Then this would bring robbery would make robbery applicable in the course of committing theft by deception. You
do these other things.
Which, but then you run into an ambiguity when you come to that definition of theft, which relates to theft by extortion.
Well, it seems to me it's going to depend on facts. I don't think that it's inherently ambiguous. You're going to get into situations where there might be a question of fact as to the nature of the threat that's made. What do you think, Kathleen? Do you think that's think that'd be a problem?
Well, my reaction is it's a fact problem, but
it's a fact problem as to whether you hire a new cook. And the ultimate success of it isn't getting material. I think that probably doesn't mean the way she says it, but somebody might argue differently.
Well, shall we move to include a definitional section here, similar to Michigan's, so principally as to define what we mean by in the course of training at that?
Yeah, I would figure that.
Right. We also want to incorporate by reference the theft definition in our comprehensive theft section, like Michigan does.
Well, that end up as being an overall editing problem that you're going to have when you finish that section on the property, because word property in some cases and so forth, that this will become kind of an editorial problem when you finish to put it together in such a form that we have everything defined where it'll be defined.
Yeah.
I was thinking in cases where you have to write a new definition, like this course of committing a theft, you may have a point about specifically putting in a definition in this section when it's a question of incorporating outside references.
Like
an editorial problem when you get further along.
Like you would say that, for example, everything we've done thus far, robbery, burglary, theft, is going to be chapter one. And at the beginning, you would say, as used in chapter one, theft means. Is this what you're talking about?
And then property of the
property
means of taking, and all of these terms, because they're going to be in reference to every one of these sections that are incorporated either by specific usage or by some reference to a term like theft. And that can be handled. That once you decide what the definition of loan, you're sure you want to use the definition of theft here, that you can leave that to an editorial solution when you try to put together a section called Crimes Against Property.
All right.
To make sure that we get them in the right location and so forth.
Yeah.
Because you can make these awfully long if you keep. All right.
Well, that's what we want to avoid.
All
right. Then do we have a motion to amend the Michigan definition of in the course of committing a theft? Did you suggest on that
narrower? Of course, I think that Bruce's alternative there is a pretty good one. And I think we might be able to avoid even putting in a section on definitions if we had the language in the course of committing or attempting to commit a theft.
Well, another argument in favor of my suggestion, which I wasn't going to state, is that I think there's some benefit in being able to read one statute in its entirety, if reasonably possible.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to refer to someplace else to see for sure what that statute means. And it's only just be worried.
Well, then do you move that following committing that we insert or attempting to commit?
Yes, I so move.
Okay, all in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Nobody opposed? Passed. Now, do we have any other questions with respect to robbery in the second degree? Any problems with sub 2? Any problems with that yet? Alright. Then let's see if we can't take this whole thing as all one. Now, we're going to two degrees of robbery. Some of the others have gone to three. Right, no, I'm not.
Now, the third degree that is missing from ours is that I've incorporated that fourth element, sub 4, and just made that first degree. Now, I might point out, this is the way the former New York penal law was. This element was one of the aggravating factors that made their former law robbery in the first degree. What they've done under their latest version, they've taken that out of first degree and made it second degree. And they said, well, we don't think this is quite as bad and quite as serious to have an accomplice present as it is to do one of these other three things. That's the difference. My recollection is that's
I tend to agree with that.
The same way that
It doesn't seem serious. It doesn't to me,
practically.
But when you get right down to it is, doggone it. When you first think about it,
I might say Michigan follows New York's lead on that, and the accomplice actually present is second degree robbery in their case. New York, the model penal code just doesn't even deal with that problem. Seems to me that I would certainly agree with.
Of course, it's
Mr. Spaulding on that, and of course I did. That's why I drafted it the way it is. But because I think the danger is there to the victim, having another person.
I have a pretty recent example of just exactly this, and it is doggone dangerous. No question about it. So I guess.
Of course, we're going to run into. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, it's been so well accepted. First snatching is as a minor juvenile thing to do. It's been so well accepted. I ask everybody thinks well. This example of Portland is so striking that we just have to revise our thinking.
Is there going to be an equal protection problem with putting this aided by another person actually present here and lumping it in with armed robbery? I'm saying this because this becomes a problem, really, when we get into the grading of the offenses. Now, armed robbery is punishable by life, and I think we would probably all agree that armed robbery should continue to be punishable by life. Are we lumping number 4 here in is punishable by life, too.
Sure.
But
I don't see any equal protection problem. All right.
I don't think there's any more of a problem there than you'd have, say, under say your felony check law. If you write a $75 check, if you write one $75 check, you could get the same penalty as if you wrote 10. But it's going to be my point is, this is going to be a matter at the time of sentencing. These are going to be factors that would be in mitigation.
I would
think.
You can certainly get less than life.
Yeah.
I wonder if we would want to make our meaning a little more clear on that number four by having some language indicating that the victim was influenced by the additional manpower present.
Of course, that's very easily taken care of presently, where assault has been so well defined by the Supreme Court. You know, where we use assault in our French statutes, and how assault defines, certainly must have the
eyes in here.
What's taken care of? What I said last?
An assault is an intentional attempt by one person by force or violence to do an injury to the person of another, coupled with the present ability to carry the intention into effect.
Well, what made me think of this was your question about whether there was an equal protection question. Here, there could be another person actually present, and that'd be completely immaterial. If he, for instance, if the presence of such another person was not known to the victim.
Or if he didn't place the person in fear.
Well, if, yeah. But I think it would could be assumed to have placed him in fear if his presence is known to the victim. I think about adding by another person actually present to the knowledge of the
Well, of course, is the danger of violence or the danger of force being used any greater if the victim knows about it than it is if he doesn't know about
it?
It
might be greater if he doesn't know about it than if he is. He wouldn't know what to have done.
In other words, what are we trying to prevent here? Granted, I think that we're concerned with the effect that this has upon the victim in getting him to do what the robbers want. But if what we're trying to do is to prevent the use of violent means to steal property.
I think you're right. I don't think
it shouldn't make any difference whether the victim knows about it or not.
I think that's perhaps.
If the victim doesn't know about it, how do you prove it? Well, no. I mean, you may not even have any evidence on it if the victim doesn't know unless you get some.
Well, as I said, I was only thinking about it in connection with some possible claim of equal protection where you're going to give one guy a greater penalty because somebody else happened to be there, then not if the presence of the other guy didn't make any difference. But I think it can be assumed that it would make a difference.
Well, actually, as we kick it around, I don't see any need really to provide this into the third degree to provide for sub 4.